If you do have your Bibles, you can turn to the book of Hebrews. That's where we're going to find ourselves, is in the book of Hebrews. And we're going to, for the next 25 minutes, 30 minutes maybe, cover the entire book of Hebrews. It's 13 chapters. We're going to have some fun and hang out in the book of Hebrews this morning. Here's what's cool. This past summer at CIY Move and CIY Mix is they studied the book of Hebrews. All of our students, our junior high or high school students, got to study it. And the theme was called In Between. Very simple. Sin came in between us and God. And then Jesus went in between and into that in between and covered that sin for us. So that's what they studied this summer. And the first night when we were in our youth group time, so at the end of the day, you go to like the church time, right? And music and worship and all the things, the sermon. And afterwards, when session is over, we go meet in a group. We all circle up at desk, and there's nerds clusters flying across the room, and Gatorade getting spit, like all those things are happening. And then finally, I'm like, let's look in. And I asked them this question. Here's what I asked. I said, in your faith, are you drifting, are you stagnant, or are you flourishing? Are you drifting, this idea of just kind of being weary in faith, being tired in faith, being what I would say more interested in other things more than your interest in Jesus. That would be drifting. And then there's the idea of stagnation. Have you ever seen just still water that just doesn't move and it's just kind of, it's not going anywhere. Your faith, maybe you're just bored. Maybe you're less satisfied. You're just kind of stuck. You're in a rut. You're like, I'm not drifting away from God, but I really don't feel like I'm growing towards him, and I'm just kind of stuck right here. At some point, you will go one way or the other. That's kind of how that middle ground works. And on the other side, there's this idea of growing. I mean, you're excited. You're still in awe of God. You're still beholding God. God is the king of your life, the king of your heart. You're focused in on him. Drifting, stagnant, and flourishing. It's been 7 months. Students, I think it's good for you to think back to that question, and us as a church to take a second just to evaluate, where do I feel like in those three areas? Do I feel like I'm just kind of drifting from God? Am I just kind of stuck, or am I growing and moving towards him? How are you doing in those areas? It's something I asked myself this week. It's something I asked myself last summer, and this question leads into the book of Hebrews. And what we're going to do, we're going to kind of pause here because I want to give you some context with the book of Hebrews and what it's about and where it is going. So the book of Hebrews, if you've read it, we don't know the author. My wife believes it's a female. She's really strong on that. She's like, yeah, it's a girl that wrote it. It's not Paul. So we have that. We also know, we do know from the book that it's written to Jewish Christians. So they grew up Jewish and at some point converted to Christianity. They are now followers of Jesus. We also know that most likely, based off a couple things in the book, that the group that was receiving this letter, the recipients, were probably in the city of Rome. And if you know anything about kind of the 60s, people in Rome, Christians were persecuted. Christians were literally at times burned at the stake so people could have lights in their gardens. Christians were crucified. Their property was taken. They were beaten. They were flogged. They were put in prison. They were thrown in the Colosseum to be eaten by lions. Like, that was the life of a Christian around that time. And regardless if it was death or if it was just hardship, he's writing to these Christians that are either experiencing some of this, the book talks about this, or they're seeing their family and their friends experience this. And the question the recipients of this book are asking is this: is it better without Jesus? Is it better to go back to Judaism? Is it better to step away from Jesus? Because then life wouldn't be as hard. I'm looking around me and I'm seeing all of this persecution. I'm seeing all of these trials. And maybe if I just stepped away from Jesus and went back to Judaism, went back to that style of worship, things would be better. Maybe the grass would be greener on that side of the fence. And if you're anything like me, you've probably wondered this yourself at times. Would it just be easier today to maybe not give Jesus my time? Would it be easier this week because of something going on in our lives? Or maybe you're really at the point of faith where you're thinking, I don't know if it's worth believing anymore. It hasn't done much for me. Maybe there's something else that is better. And what we're going to see today in the book of Hebrews is this. Jesus is better. That's literally what he tells his audience. That's what he tells these readers that are in Rome watching this persecution. And they're wondering, is it time to flee? Is it time to run away? Is there a better way? And he says, no, Jesus is better. Let's dive into the book. We're gonna start in chapter 1. And again, we're going to kind of roll through the whole book, okay? Chapter 1, verse 4. Here's what he says. He's speaking about Jesus. So he became as much superior to the angels as the name he inherited is superior to theirs. So there's three verses gone, and he rolls into verse 4 of this book, this letter to this group of people, and he says, guess what? The angels, the ones that are in heaven with God daily, like every day, that have been with him forever, that we know since they were created and will be there in Revelation and in the end, like that group, those angels, Jesus is superior to them. Jesus is better than them. Jesus is higher than them. So that's the very first thing he tells them, is Jesus is better than the angels. And then we're gonna flip forward. We're going to go to Hebrews chapter 3. I know there's some turning today. I do apologize for that. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 3. Jesus has been found worthy of greater honor than Moses, just as the builder of a house has greater honor than the house itself. I want to say this. For Jewish people, Moses was the goat. If you don't know what that means, ask someone under 40, 35, I don't know. It means greatest of all time. He was the most known, the most prolific, and the really the most important prophet up till Jesus. But for pre-Jesus, for all of the Jews, Moses was the goat. He was the guy they looked back to. He was the guy when they looked back, he was the one called to come into Jesus, into Egypt, and save the people, to bring them out of Egypt. He's the one that brought them through God's power across the Red Sea. Then they get to Mount Sinai, and he spends 40 days with God. And he comes down, he has the Ten Commandments now. So now they have their kind of the rules, and here's our guidelines of what our relationship with God is going to look like. He's the one that receives here's what the tabernacle, the big tent that they put up that they would worship, their kind of church. Here's what it looks like. Here's what the priestly system, and here's how to do the sacrifices. Moses was the mediator of that. He was the one that God spoke through to the people. So he was the one that every Jewish person, every Israelite would look back to and say, yeah, he's him. Like, he's the important one. And this author says this, Jesus has greater honor than Moses. Jesus is not just better than the angels. Jesus is also better than Moses. He is greater than Moses. Turn ahead to chapter 8. We're going to keep going, and there's a few other things in the book that we could look at, but let's go look at chapter 8, verse 6. But in fact, the ministry Jesus has received is as superior to theirs as the covenant of which he is mediator is superior to the old one, since the new covenant is established on better promises. So we're going to have to kind of, there's a lot in this verse. This could be a whole sermon by itself, just this verse. So we're going to kind of break this apart and understand when Moses received this old covenant in the book of Exodus, okay? You're over here. And this covenant, this relationship between God and the people was based on what they were doing. Here's the Ten Commandments. Here's all the laws, here's all the regulations, here's the things you must do daily, here's the animals that you have to sacrifice, and that's gonna kind of appease my anger. That's gonna help with the sin that's happening, and it's kind of a band-aid. It's this temporary old covenant relationship based on rules and laws. That's where we get the idea of religion. Like that would be a religion. This old covenant with God and the people was religion. This verse is saying, but the new covenant that Jesus is the mediator of, remember, Moses was between God and man. Now Jesus sits, between God and man. And in this new covenant, there's no laws, there's no give sacrifices every day. It's I gave this sacrifice, and it's about abiding in me. It's about abiding in me. Right here, this is the sacrifice I give. So it's not about what we are doing, it's about what he did. You've heard this. It's not religion, it's relationship. That's literal. It's a relationship with Jesus on this side in the new covenant. It is literally a religion of laws and rules and do these things in the old covenant. So that's what he says here in verse 6. He's like, this is where you were. This is the covenant with which you lived under and in. Look at the new one. Look at the one you're living in now. Why go back to that? Why is that better? How is that better? Turn to chapter 10. He's going to continue to tell them about things that are greater, superior, and better. Chapter 10, there's two verses, verse 11 and verse 12. Now, he's gonna speak of the priests. These were the guys that gave the sacrifices in this old covenant. Day after day, every priest stands and performs his religious duties. Again and again, he offers the same sacrifices, which can never take away sin. You hear that? Never. Not a single sacrifice could take away any of the sin of the people. It was a band-aid. Verse 12. When this priest, speaking of Jesus, had offered for all time one sacrifice for sins, he sat down at the right hand of God. Now let me tell you where this comes from. The author of Hebrews is actually taking this from Exodus 29. Let's kind of see the OG passage where God gave it to Moses to the people. Exodus 29, 38 through 41. This is what you are to offer on the altar regularly each day. Two lambs a year old. Offer one in the morning and the other at twilight. With the first lamb, offer a tenth of an ephah of the finest flour mixed with a quarter of a hin of oil pressed from olives and a quarter of the hin of wine as a drink offering. Sacrifice the lamb at twilight with the same grain offering and its drink offering as in the morning, a pleasing aroma, a food offering presented to the Lord. That's this old covenant that they lived in. Every single day, sacrifices were given for them. It was this reminder of sin. It was this kind of temporary band-aid atonement. And it was also a foreshadow of the result of sin is death. So there has to be death because of sin. And at some point, there'll be the perfect death. And that's what the cross is going to bring. There's a term at the end of that. He says that he sat down. This was the end of verse 12. He sat down at the right hand of God. This idea that it's finished. Here's how I think, because I like sports. So I watch football from August to February. I usually take about 3 weeks, and then in March, I start watching NBA, and I'll watch that through the summer, okay? So watch a lot of basketball at that point. And if you watch basketball, football, both of them happen in this, but it's easier to see in basketball. If there's a point at which a team is up by a lot of points, you get into the fourth quarter, there's a couple minutes left in the game, and you'll hear the buzzer, and you'll kind of see the stands, the people cheering, and the starters, the guys that are the best on the team, they go and they do what? They sit. They sit down. They don't need to play anymore. Their work right then is finished. I got to go to Providence game on Monday. Providence, number one, high school boys, hadn't lost a game. Still haven't. They ended up undefeated for the whole season. They're playing number two. Elkins, I think is who it was. And they get to the fourth quarter. They demolished them. And there was probably 3 minutes left, and you heard the buzzer, and all five starters walked off the court, and some of the younger guys that hadn't got as much playing time, they got to come in. And I was sitting in the stands with all the fans and the parents, and they all rose up and just started clapping. They started cheering. All the starters went over, and they did what? They sat down. Because that's what it looked like on the cross. The same way is the moment Jesus got to heaven, he sat down. That's what it's speaking of here, this idea of sitting down because the work is finished. The same way with the starters in basketball or the quarterback in football, when you get to the end, like, you don't need to do more. It was sufficient. What you did was sufficient. You can go sit down. The priest of the old covenant never sat. There was never resting for them when it came to sacrifices. Jesus gave one sacrifice, raised from the dead, was ascended. And now he sits in heaven mediating. He sits in heaven between God and between us. And so here's what this whole book looks like for Hebrews, is the author takes chapter 1 through chapter 10, and he's writing to this group of Christians that are hurting and that are wondering, maybe it's better somewhere else. Maybe it's better to do something else. And he spends 10 chapters just telling them, Jesus is better. Jesus is better. Jesus is better, and applying it to lots of things. And at the end of chapter 10, there's verse 39. It's a transitional verse where he's going to move into a new chapter, but a new idea. Here's what it says. But we do not belong to those who shrink back and are destroyed. Those who give up on faith. That's what he's speaking of there. But those who have faith and are saved. We're not a part of the group that's going to let our faith go, that's going to say, hey, that's better. Let me run to that. Let me get rid of my Christianity. But no, we are ones that have faith and are saved. And then that transition goes to chapter 11. I call it the Hall of Faith. All of these people throughout the Old Testament that did great things, that had great faith. And then at the end of chapter 11, you get into chapter 12. And the first two verses of chapter 12 is where we're going to be, and we're going to end our morning on these. It's another transition. You have 10 chapters that say Jesus is better. You have chapter 11 that's like, look at all of these faithful people. And now you get to chapter 12, and it's kind of this, what do you want us to do with that? What are we supposed to do with all of this information? And the author says this in these two verses. Therefore, because of all of this, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, that's chapter 11, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. There's four things here that he tells them to do, and I think they are applicable for us today. Here's the first one. He says to throw off everything that hinders. Now, he's actually not speaking of sin in this. The way that they would have heard this, the way that they would have heard these words when they were read to them, is in the sense of athletics. There's lots of mentionings in here. Book of Romans, the same way. There's lots of athletics, and so they're going to use analogies from that. Some of their athletes would train with weights. So they'd put weights on their legs, they'd put weights on their arms. That was something that they would use when they would train, when they were running. People do that today too. You can put weights on and you try to get a higher vertical, okay? They train for that. I'm going to be a nerd here. Has anyone ever watched Dragon Ball Z? Do I have any nerds in the room that like anime? Okay. I watched that growing up. I was in like sixth grade. The main character, his name's Goku, he gets in what's called a gravity chamber. And he literally turns the gravity up so that his body is like this, and he has to get stronger to be able to stand up. That's kind of how they would train. They couldn't add gravity. That's not how life works. But they could add weight so that they could get stronger underneath that weight, and they were able to run. But when they showed up to a race, they wouldn't run with that weight on them. So it says, throw off everything that hinders. The weight's not sinful. It's not even a bad thing, but it's something that's going to hinder them from running that race the best that they can. So for us, it's looking at it this way. Are there things in your life, and I ask myself this question too, that aren't sinful, but they're not helping us run the race? Are there things that are taking, you know, just space in our minds, space in our schedule, space in our lives that are not helping us move forward, but literally they're hindering us? It's like running the race of faith, but we have weights on. One of the things, my wife and I are both doing what I call February fast. No media this month at all. 95% no media. So deleted all the video games off my phone. I haven't watched a YouTube short since January. I haven't watched Netflix or Prime or HBO or Disney, whatever all the things are. Haven't watched any of those since January, outside of if like my kids are watching a movie, I can watch a movie with them, stuff like that. But we have fasted from some of this. None of this is bad. If you want to binge an entire episode of Netflix like one night, that's fine. I wouldn't say that's sinful. I'm not going to say it's the best thing to do with your time. You might be tired the next day and cranky and grumpy. That's this right here. It's not sinful, but maybe it's distracting. It's not sinful, but maybe it's hindering you in your walk. And so lessening those things, throwing those things off to help you run the race. Here's the second thing he says. Throw off the sin. Now he goes into sin that so easily entangles. We don't have to spend a lot of time here. I don't have an analogy for this. It's very straight. He's just like, just get rid of your sin. Like it easily, sin is so easy to just latch onto us. That's what he says there. It entangles us. He's like, if it's entangled, you can't run that race. So get rid of the weights, get rid of the sin, and you'll be able to run your race. Remove the sin. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5, I think it's chapter 5, might be chapter 6. He says that if you're sinning, if your eye causes you to sin, gouge it out, throw it away. It's kind of a gross analogy, but that's fine. And then he says, man, if your hand caused you to sin, cut it off. Like it would be better for you not to have those things than to end up in hell because of sin. That's what he tells the people that he's speaking to in his sermon. Same thing here. Throw off that sin. Here's the third thing he tells them. So once you've done these two things, run. Run with perseverance. We all know what that word means, that we have to continue on if it's easy or if it's difficult. If we feel like doing it or if we don't feel like doing it, it's this idea of a marathon. Again, think of athletics. He's telling them to remove these things that are going to affect your race, and you got to remember to keep running because it's a long race. It's a marathon. And part of that is looking back to chapter 11. Look at all these men and women that were faithful their entire lives. They finished the race. They were faithful throughout their life. He's looking back to that. Run with perseverance. Here's number four, the last one that he tells them. Fixing our eyes on Jesus. So we've gotten rid of the distractions that hinder us. We've gotten rid of the sin that entangles us. We're looking ahead. We're running this race, and we have this perseverance. And the thing that we're focused on at the end down there is Jesus. Our eyes are fixed on that. And this word fixing is really two different things. It's actually looking away from something. So you're kind of retraining your attention, your eyes. You're like, I'm not gonna look at that. I'm gonna look here. You're looking away from something to see something else. Those are the two separate ideas. Look away and to see. It's a deliberate choice to focus on Jesus. That's what it is. It's a deliberate choice. It doesn't just happen. You guys know this. If you just were just like, faith is going to go well, I'm never just not going to participate at all, it'd just work. That's not what he's saying here. He said, no, look away so you can see and fix your eyes on Jesus. And the word that he uses, fixing, is continual. It's not I fix my eyes on Jesus on Monday, Tuesday through Sunday is great, right? No, it's every day. It's every hour. It's every moment. This fixing, continuous, continuous, continuous. If you're anything like me, I wrote some things here that, man, I struggle with in my life with all this. Busy, tired, distracted, anxious. If we're being super real, there are things on certain days that I delight in more than Jesus. There's just those days where you're like, man, I know that I need to spend time with Jesus, but my flesh is almost longing and crying out for something else. There's more delight in this moment, this temporary joy, than looking to Jesus. If you're anything like me, you struggle with sin, you're sinful. And my encouragement is this, it's what he told them. Remove the distractions, repent from sin, and fix your eyes on Jesus. Remove distractions, repent from sin, and fix your eyes on, fix and fix and fix. That's what he says, continually fixing our eyes on Jesus because he is better. I want to invite the band back up. You guys can come up and get plugged in and get ready for our final song. I want to turn back to Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2 real quick. And I just cut a small portion of the middle of it out. Here's what it says. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross. For the joy set before him, there are two interpretations for this. One, it's his joy, okay? Like, Jesus was happy to go to the cross for you. That's one side. The other interpretation is this, for the sake of our joy. Jesus went to the cross for our joy on this end. His joy for us is better than any other joy that we may try to pursue or go after. So regardless if you're drifting, if you're stagnant, if you're flourishing, I think the call is the same. Fix your eyes on Jesus, for he is better. Let's pray. God, thank you for today. Thank you for your word. Thank you for the book of Hebrews and what it calls us, that the challenge and the encouragement of Hebrews to say, hey, I'm better. And there are things in this world that we're going to run after. We're going to chase after. We're going to deal with sin. We're going to deal with distractions. We're going to deal with a heart that longs for everything we see, greed and pride and all of those things. And in that, you say, I am better. I am better. I am better. Lord, today, help me, help those listening online, help those in the room, just to remember Jesus is better. And to stamp that as a sign, as a billboard in their world, to remind themselves when it does get hard, when persecution comes, when trials come, when life is difficult, when sin is rampant, when the distractions are in our face, Jesus is better.